And welcome back to the Cinematic World Podcast, everyone. My name is Dwayne, and today we have another episode of the Cinematic World Show, episode 140, the big 140 of the Cinematic World Show. It's the show we talk all things movies and television news. I am joined by some guests from the Cinematic World team. First, we have from the Box Office Report Show, Larry, the Chili Boy. The Chosan, hello.
Hey, we're here. We're back. What up?
It's good to have you here, as always, Larry. And we are joined from the Cinemania live show here on a rare world show. We have Hannah Louise, the 17th. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Yeah, Hannah's a city girl now. You know? Going to New York, meeting Cinemania World members. That is nuts.
Well, yes.
Going to the biggest screen of all time. Listen, before we start, okay? So we was going to do a live show this weekend. I've had like 15 messages. God!
About what
is Hannah's thoughts on Dune Part 2?
Oh,
Jesus.
Lord.
So, Hannah,
get your people under control.
So, Hannah, go ahead. Take like a minute or two. You're Dune 2. Golly. Jesus.
I loved it. I figured that I'd really love it. But also, there's a lot of the movie that I didn't expect. Because Part 1 to me is a very faithful adaptation of the first half of the first book. So I figured that Part 2 would also be a pretty faithful adaptation. And I was actually really scared of them changing any of the lore of the books, because it's already like dense and like convoluted and just like runs deep. So to me, at least, changing things would disrupt some other lore possibly and just make things kind of messy. But Dune Part 2 is actually very different to the second half of the book, and they cut out a lot of storylines, but also the stuff that they did add I thought was great changes. And the entire time that I was watching the movie, I really loved that I was able to still be like surprised, even though I've read the book. And I think it's just such a spectacle. And I feel like we haven't had a movie like this in theaters since like The Batman. Being able to sit down and watch something like this and just like feel that buzz again for a blockbuster, it was really exciting. So yeah, I fucking loved it. It's amazing.
I said, fuck them books.
It's like weird because the changes itself, it kind of seems like they aren't that big, but then like in the long run, they are kind of like really big changes. Something like really big that they cut out of the movie completely was Chani and Paul have a son.
Addressed
at all, actually. And yeah. I was expecting it to happen at during the scene when Chani and
didn't they
Jessica...
say she's pregnant?
No.
I'm thinking of the mom. I'm thinking of when the mom got the juice. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
So Chani and Jessica, they had their little like moment in the movie where Chani's like, you did this to him, da, 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 and like she's walking out. And I figured that Jessica was gonna turn around and be like, you're pregnant. But she didn't. So I was like, that's like a really big kind of like.
I feel like that happened in the movie. I am baffled. I feel
no.
like. Yeah. I cannot wait to watch it again. This is why. See, now I'm like, I can't wait to watch it again.
Somebody just said it on our review, was like, she's pregnant at the end. Like, I feel like somebody just said that.
Yeah, and that's why I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, they did say that.
They definitely don't address it.
Yeah.
I didn't think they did. I was trying to find signs, even in, like, my third viewing, and I was like, they don't really even let on to her being pregnant. So I feel like people were bringing their book, like, knowledge and just inferring it into the end of that movie.
Yeah.
Also, there's this thing. Okay, so my one little, like, nitpick with the movie is...
Is it the fetus?
It has to do with the lore once again. So with who? The lore. So the book is very heavy on the prophecy being something that the Bene Gesserit just like made up. and that it's all fucking fake, and that Jessica is like very much like playing chess right now, playing chess, not checkers. Because she's Bene Gesserit, obviously, with Paul fulfilling these prophecies. And it's a thing in the book where it's like, is Paul the actual like Messiah, or is it just like, you know, coincidental bullshit, you know, whatever. And the movie very much leans onto the side of no, he's actually like the Messiah because he keeps fulfilling all these prophecies, but they don't ever like take a moment to be like, no, but the Bene Gesserit like made all this shit up and it is like coincidental, because later on, I'm not going to spoil anything, obviously, later on he doesn't end up fulfilling prophecies that, you know, fucking like Stilgard would be the one to believe in and be like, he's the Messiah. So that's why leaving the movie, I was like, that's the one thing where I'm like, I don't like this road that they're going down if they do commit to going down this road of Paul actually being like Lisa Nagaib. So yeah, that's just the one thing.
I think one that's thing. What he tried to do, because I saw somebody who's, I watched a YouTube video, a review of like a Dune head who like loves the books. And she actually, she didn't love that they like split, they made split factions. So like, I guess in the book, the Fremen are all like a united, all believe.
All of them believe it?
Yeah.
They all kind of believe it. And in the movie, they decided to obviously kind of make it a generational gap almost with Chani.
I like that idea better.
But I actually think it works really well for the reason Hannah just said, because if we didn't have like Chani's little faction who didn't believe it and who weren't calling out the bullshit and being like, no, it was made by the Bene Gesserit, like this is not real, then it would all be like, oh, he is fulfilling all of these prophecies. But I think as the movie goes along, you're right, they kind of stop pushing back. Like as Chani starts falling in love with him, her faction quiets down, or they stop showing them like being like, no, this is still bull crap. Like she does obviously near the end, but once again she's like, this is bullshit.
And I feel like there really wouldn't be a big conflict, but I think what really works was the tension at the end between them two. And I think if you go with how you guys are describing the book, I feel like there's not a lot of tension between them two. And I like that.
I also heard that ending makes for an interesting dilemma for where their story is supposed to go in the next book, because it does not set up for where they end up in the book. So either they're going to have to really change Chani's like character and what she does, or she's going to have quite the 180 in movie.
No spoiler.
The thing is that like, no spoiler. Okay. The thing is that because I
want to read the book after Dune 3. Yeah. That's why.
The thing is that with Chani particularly, they already took away her, you know, having a child. They also did take away her and Princess Erlyn's dynamic. So they don't like each other, obviously. And her having that child is like a big thing, a big conflict between them. No spoilers. If you've read the book, you know what I'm talking about. there's a big conflict between them involving that child. So they cut that out completely. So with Erlyn, the way that she's painted in the movie, she kind of seems like a pacifist almost. And I was like, this is weird. concerning Erlyn. But with like Chani in particular, I like the way that she's portrayed in the movie. I really like the changes that they've made, but also it's like, as somebody who knows what happens in the future, I don't know how we're going to reach that point for Chani at this point.
How did you feel, Anna? One final question about a change. Sorry, Dwayne. How did you feel about the fetus versus having a child running around doing the child is already born and actively doing all the stuff that Jessica just like translates.
She's like
herself
pre-born is
a little kid is like running around like pulling strings and shit.
The book is pre-born, like quotation marks, but it's like an actual, it's a child, she's born. It's not a fetus.
It's a little baby, like a couple months old or something.
She ages like very fast. I liked it. I thought it was another like creepy little detail involving Jessica. I actually
you didn't want them to go the David Lynch route and have a child like giving prophecies and this little girl.
I thought it was funny that she would like when the fetus would whisper, "What's happening, mother?"
Jessica being like, "Shh, be quiet."
Yeah, I thought that was funny. Listen, can we talk about Austin Butler for a second, please? Loved him.
I have to give him his shines. Yeah.
Okay, people are going a little bit overboard by saying that he's like the best villain the MCU can ever. Listen, that's false. I think he's like one of, if he was an MCU villain, because I keep seeing that argument, I think he would be like top three, top four. I thought he was great. Dave Bautista was my only nitpick of the movie. I thought he was
Drax. Did you like Drax? He's been getting a lot of praise too. How'd you feel, Hannah? Me and Dwayne are on the same page that it wasn't. It was a big step Bautista? Down from movie number one for
Drax.
Yeah, I think
Drax. I don't know.
His death scene is so. That's one of my big complaints. I forgot to mention his death scene is very anticlimactic. Like they build up this battle between him and Josh Brolin, and then he just kills him. Like Josh Brolin owns his ass. Like
and the fight is like the whole movie. Yeah, the fight is like 2 seconds. He gets beat up by Austin Butler at one point. Yeah, he's a geek. He's just a certified geek in this.
That's another change, kind of, because like Fade is a part of the book, but he definitely doesn't have the role that he has in this movie. So I think that was they really sidelined Dave Bautista to be like Fade, fear Fade, and like really fast paced way of being like. He's no longer focused on Austin Butler.
So who are you taking, Hannah? Austin Butler or Sting?
Sting.
From the David original, Lynch. That's who plays Fade Rafa in the David Lynch.
I have never seen the first one, the original or whatever.
I've never watched David Lynch's.
I don't.
Either. You unfortunately, have it, Hannah?
Yeah, no. I don't think I can.
Like, okay.
No, I saw that their shield and that. I know it's like limited at the times, but I saw that their shield outfits were like actual blocks. I said, is this Minecraft? What is happening? So, and then like Fade Rava's in underwear. I don't know.
I was going to watch it in high school because I read Dune in high school. So I, because the whole time that we were reading it, because I read it for an AP English. The whole time we were reading it, everyone just kept talking about the movie and how they're gonna watch the movie instead of reading it. Like, of course, we're all fucking high schoolers. And I planned on watching the movie, but then I just never did because I was like, the book is like excellent. Why do I want to do that?
Hannah, I'm like begging at this point though. It's like 80s cheese madness to like. It goes all out on the weirdness compared to obviously these, which are trying to ground the whole world a little bit more. Man. And those are just kind of like nasty and crazy. that Dune from the 80s.
I mean, I love David Lynch, so
hates the movie. He hates it. Oh, yes. And it's like pretends he didn't do it. Like he's just like, nah, I didn't. What you do? Dune? What? I never made a Dune movie. Yeah, no, Lynch hates it.
Yeah, he does.
Nah, I've seen so many clips. I personally can't do it. But
there's a pug. Like there is a little pug just chilling with the Atreides.
I saw the worms. I saw the worms, and I was like, "What the fuck?" I don't know. I can't do it.
God. All right, Dwayne. Before we get into the Oscars, should we just do a quick top five rundown?
I actually put that into like the third thing to do.
Oh, okay. Show.
So don't worry, we'll get there. We'll get to the we are on Dune. We didn't do a box office show, everyone. So I guess Larry, let's do a quick little rundown. Quick,
okay. Top five of the weekend. Kung Fu Panda beat all estimates. Actually, the funny thing is, Dwayne and I just answered a question last week. Somebody asked us what was going to be the next movie to break 50 million opening. Little did we know, it was literally coming this weekend. Kung Fu Panda 4 with a $58 million opening weekend. It's the second biggest opening in the Kung Fu Panda franchise. I'm telling y'all, they have left a huge market in family films by just leaving January and February wide open. And you get openings like this because families are like starving for anything to go watch. But Kung Fu Panda also opened worldwide this weekend in a staggered release to 86.2 million to date. At number two, Dune Part 2 only dropped 44% in its second weekend of release, making $46.2 million this past weekend.
Thank you to that guy who went to see it like 15 times.
Yeah. He just his 15th watch today.
The film is already the biggest movie of the year. It's made $162 million domestic and $374 million worldwide and should pass the entire gross of the first Dune by the end of this coming weekend. Mm-hmm. Then we have a steep drop. So the first two are amazing, great numbers, yay! And then Imaginary opened with $9.9 million in its opening weekend. Oh, looks like the Blumhouse formula is starting to wear off. That box office gold ain't shining like it once did. The film barely opened internationally, so far it only has $10.7 million, and none of the three of us have seen it, and two of us always watch horror, so that's
true.
I got a cute hat from them, though.
I saw it. Hannah promoted the hat, and I said I won't be seeing it, though. I was like, wow, this is crazy. But anyway, my problem with Blumhouse is I feel like they're starting to not market and just independent, and they're starting to depend on their name. Mm-hmm. Imaginary, I thought that movie was coming out in the summer, only to realize that it came out like last week. So I think they just had to market it better. Because when you market things like...
There's like three or four Imaginary Friend movies this year. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I think that Blumhouse isn't putting enough like weight behind the directors that they have in their like house, and how people like, when I talk to people who aren't like movie people, I say James Wan, they know who James Wan is.
That's
like
it.
You know, like if you're promoting your movie and it's like somebody, they have a lot of people like James Wan in-house, like Lee Whannell, James Wan, like people who like they go to their movies because it's directed by them. So for them to not like put the weight of like the directors that like people absolutely know and they will show up for behind their movies anymore, that's like, I think that's a problem.
I just watched Invisible Man the other day too. Gas.
Yeah.
It's so good. Remember when like on the pod, like the trailer came out.
I was like, this was the number one biggest this hater. This terrible. Fucking movie.
That trailer was not great. But the movie's fantastic. I love it.
Well, then number four, we've got Cabrini from Angel Studios.
What the fuck?
That made $7.1 million from 2,800 theaters. So far today, it's made $7.9 million domestic and just over $8 million worldwide. Another movie none of us have seen. And finally, at number five is Bob Marley, One Love, still holding strong in this top five. A really success for Paramount in the first part of the year. It's made $4 million in its fourth weekend of release, down 45%. That brings Bob Marley's biopic up to $89.7 million domestic and $160.9 million worldwide.
Jesus.
Yeah, that Bob Marley's doing good and is killing it out there.
Well, they're expecting a billion on that Michael Jackson one, so I bet that studio is like jumping up and down right now.
Well, meanwhile,
we had a nice
bleeding down at 21.
We had a nice increase for a lot of the Oscar movies as well. Oppenheimer, The Holdovers, Anatomy of a Fall.
Not all them getting a little bump.
Oppenheimer's trying to get to that Billy. They're trying.
I think they'll re-release in like a year and all.
To get to that Billy.
Yeah.
Desperate to get that.
just like what James Cameron did.
Desperate. I know Warner, when we'll talk about it. Warner Brothers, though, they are mad as hell right now. You know it. Those execs are pissed that they fucked over Nolan like they did.
Oh, yeah.
You mean.
Nolan
and
died.
That's probably why they're like, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's probably why they're like with Denis right now, clinging on to that man for dear fucking life.
They should let that man
after he wrote that scathing Variety article about them. Ooh. I am surprised that he is still there.
No, once they lost Nolan, they were like, we need like our auteur, you know, held by a standard director.
Like, I know they're probably mad as hell too about Tenet because it released and it made so much money, and they're like, obviously they're getting that money, but still they're like,
oh. So Hannah, what you gonna do next year if they call out the nominees and Denis Villeneuve is not on that best director lineup?
Can you imagine?
There's no way he's not. There's no way. And I think if they gave it to Oppenheimer this year, I think there's a chance that he wins. Depending on what else we have for the rest of the year. But I mean, I can't imagine him not being nominated though.
That will be wild. If they snub him again, that will be insane.
All right, let's get into our actual news for the show here. Quickly, we're going to run down the Academy Awards. I want to get you guys' thoughts on the show. I thought the show was good. I didn't stay up for all of it. I had a really long shift Saturday. I was just really tired. But one nitpick that I had, I think we can do out with these monologues in the, you know, for the host.
Well, yes.
Those can go. Also, too, for the sake of like pacing, I did not like the like former winner gives like a bio on the nominee. It just took way too long. And I was like, when they started with the supporting actress, I said, this is so nice. And then I was like, are they going to do this for every single one? And then they did. And I said, I want to see the clips. I want to see that. Like, you know, I wanted to see that. I don't want to. No disrespect.
I literally only really liked the supporting actress one because like those people actually connected to the people, because there were some of them where, like, no offense to Jennifer Lawrence, really? She didn't know what the fuck to say. Hers was very like, you know, she was reading off a script. She's like, I never met this woman in my life. I don't know her. So it was just like a straight up, like, and there was a few of them like that. Hers was just the most noticeable to me. I was like, oh,
yeah.
And I was reading something somebody prepared, like, for her.
I love the Lupita one with Devine. I thought that was amazing. But then when I realized that this is for supporting and they're about to do this three more times tonight, and this, I was tired Sunday. I was completely disconnected that it was Oscar Sunday. Everybody was hype. I was trying to watch my movies like with like a dry. I was so tired. So when I saw that they were starting at 7, I was like, oh my God, this thing's gonna end at like 10? Okay, cool, I can make it. And then they were doing the here's a bio of this person, and I said, oh man, this thing's going to like 11:30, bro. Ooh. And I went to bed around like 9 something, and it did. I woke up around 12 and it was like just ending. I said, all right. I was like, oh man. So I don't think that worked for me. I would like to see, I don't know about all that. And why is John Cena naked? What are we
doing here? I thought that was a funny bit.
I don't know.
I thought it was funny too.
This year proved to me though why we don't need a host. This year was like the perfect example because he was part of that John Cena thing, but any presenter could have done like the Jimmy Kimmel part. And his opening monologue wasn't very funny. All he did was like offend our DJ and that was it. It was the presenters that were funny, like the Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito and Michael Keaton.
Yeah,
was super John funny Mulaney. And cute. I thought it was
John Mulaney.
John Mulaney was so great.
That Madam John Webb Cena line, bit I was howling. Great.
Yeah, I loved the Kate McKinnon and America Ferrera and Steven Spielberg little bit was really cute. So I was like, see, if the presenters can just come out here and do a cute little, you know, bit that relates to each category, it moves us along at a decent pace. You're still entertained. There's funny moments. And we don't have to stop for Jimmy Kimmel to come out on stage and do nothing. Like,
he was the least
funny part of the night.
Yeah, I really want to go back to no host. And it's I'm sure, because people were like, ooh, just have John Mulaney. Maybe he doesn't want to do it. I'm sure they asked him. They asked, like, everybody. And then they were like, all right, you're Jimmy Kimmel again, you know? So everyone declines. They're like, nah. So, yeah. Yeah. Overall, though, we're going to get into it now.
That's one of the better shows in a while.
Yeah, though. One of the better shows for sure. Not as newsworthy as, you know, Will Smith.
Well.
That was nuts. I literally recorded that night. It was so crazy, you know? So, all right, let's run down through some of it. Actor, best actor in a leading role. We had the winner for that one was Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. He beat out O'Reilly Cooper, Coleman Domingo, and Paul Giamatti and Jeffrey Wright. Then we had actor in a supporting role. Winner for that was Robert Downey Jr. Everyone kind of saw that coming.
Who's been getting raked over the coals for kind of ignoring Ke Huy Quan?
I saw that. Think sometimes there's so much stuff happening that I don't think it's intentional all the time, but it did look bad.
Every time I watched it back, I'm like, it doesn't seem like he did it on purpose.
Yeah, I don't think
it's like actually very obvious that he didn't do it on purpose because he got the award and then went to the mic. It seemed like.
Then we had actress in a leading role. Emma Stone won that. A lot of people shocked by that one.
I was sad.
A lot of people were going for Lily Gladstone. My mom was going for Lily Gladstone. But
I was going for Lily Gladstone.
I'm not a fan of Poor Things, but I thought Emma Stone was really good. But this whole thing has just been a mess because then we sparked this whole thing of that stupid Variety article that said Lily Gladstone was in the wrong category. And thank God that whoever did that got cooked, you know. Go ahead, Larry, your thoughts on this one. I know you had some big thoughts about it.
It's one of those things where I get it. I know why Emma Stone, I think she's very good in Poor Things. I had nothing against her or her performance, but this was definitely the acting category that I was like most invested in this year. Really just wanted Lily to have this because I thought her performance was just, I don't know, there was just something about it. It was so magnetic and... You know, you hate to be like the nuanced versus big performance, but that's kind of what it felt like this year. So Lily was the restrained, quiet performance, and Emma gave the more visible performance. So I understand why it was voted, but it was just such a special performance. And of course, the other thing is everybody's talking about she'll be back. Yeah, she has a Kaufman movie coming up, but when's the last time a Kaufman movie made a big splash at the Oscars? And
it's so tough to return too for the Oscars.
Well, if you're not white, it is very tough. Because Emma Stone has been here 5 times, her nomination at 30-something years old, and Lily is older than her and just got on the map. Angela Bassett has been snubbed over and over. We've had literally 2 women of color in 90-something years. So I don't know why we thought they'd do it 2 years in a row. That was on us, I guess. We really thought they were going to go back-to-back with women of color. Hell no. In the leading role. So I don't know. I hope she'll be back. I hope she gets opportunities, but we've seen it time and time again, even in supporting like Lupita, so many women, they get this award and then their career, you know, they're struggling. They're fighting for their lives just to get any sort of recognition again. I mean, even Viola Davis hasn't won lead actress. Viola effing Davis. Yeah, so that's the thing. And I think that's what people were like, it got nasty. Of course, because it always does. But I think that's where that sentiment came from with Emma Stone. At least that's how I view it, of people saying, does she need to when Lily, because viably, this could be Lily's only shot. And that's kind of how I think a lot of people felt last year with Michelle Yeoh versus Cate Blanchett. Everyone feels like Cate Blanchett will be back, but... What's realistically, what's the chances Michelle Yeoh is going to be nominated again? You know, not very high. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think whenever a woman of color is kind of in the mix, you feel like this is it. This is like their chance to win. and we don't know if they're ever going to be seen on this stage again. Whereas Emma Stone would probably be nominated again, even, you know.
That Angela Bassett loss is so insane to me to this day, because like no one has been able to convince me why Jamie Lee Curtis won this award. Mm-hmm. No one. And I'm like, what did she do that was better than Angela Bassett? Like, she played a zombie. She had like four lines. Her most significant line was Mrs. Wang. Stop. And she won the award. Oh.
I don't like that people are comparing the two, though, because at least to me, Jamie Lee Curtis did not absolutely 100% did not deserve that award. No. There was nothing award-worthy in that performance. Obviously, when Angela Bassett lost, there is a lot more behind just the performances, obviously, because Angela Bassett is just so... I mean, both of them are very, like, seasoned actresses. But if you look at their filmographies, I do think that Angela Bassett is given far more award-worthy performances that she's been snubbed for consistently. But then if, like, when you try and compare the two situations, which I've seen, like, a lot of people do, at least to me, Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone, they both gave award-worthy performances. Both of their performances are fucking excellent. So, like, to me, at least this award season, either one of them winning was a win-win because I love both of their performances. But my winner for the season overall was Lily Gladstone. So when Emma did win, it was a huge shock. And I think that everyone who was upset had every reason to be upset. I was upset.
I saw your tweet.
But
he said, I'll be behind you. Give me some time. I'll be there for you, but not right now. Not tonight. I'm upset too.
In that moment, it's very upsetting. And like Larry said, everything that he just said, there's a lot more behind it than just the performances, obviously. But just going off of the performances at this time.
Yeah.
It was a win-win to me. So I was upset.
I can agree to that.
I understand all of the sadness revolving around her win. But
somebody said, I know the Oscars made sure Lily didn't get on that stage because she would have called for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
Ooh. I said, ooh!
They made sure Mark Ruffalo didn't get on that stage.
Oh my god, I love Mark Ruffalo. He ran. He ran to him. They were trying to hush him along on that red carpet. He said not move and ran to somebody to say what he wanted to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The people making a big deal over Angela Bassett in that interview too are wild. That she was literally just was like, yeah, I was disappointed. I was shocked. I thought I was gonna win, you know.
She's not allowed to be disappointed.
Bro, she better than me. I would have been like, yo, that's bullshit.
She looked a little sad, but she was gracious the whole night. I can't believe people thought she was a sore loser last year. That's wild. Meanwhile, Diane Warren this year got up out of her chair and said, let me talk to a manager.
Yeah, because what was it? Her song didn't get announced? Who gives a fuck?
Well, okay. I do have something to say about this. It's very strange to me that they did that. I understand the thought behind, you know, the songs have been performed all night, so we don't really... Maybe don't give them a package, but can you at least read it real quick? Like, before up and then El Pacino.
Oh, that was atrocious.
Know it's a mess, but that video has me fucking hollering.
Yeah, that was atrocious.
She's over here doing nursery rhymes, bitch.
No, the Oscar of the night. The biggest thing of the year as far as movies. The big announcement. What we've all been waiting for. I see Oppenheimer. I don't know. I was baffled when I saw that clip because I had hilarious. Went to bed. I went to bed and I woke up and I was checking Twitter, see what won. And then Oppenheimer, I was like, hey, Oppenheimer. And then I saw the clip and I said, holy smokes. That is embarrassing.
I love that he came out to clarify, though. The only part he could really clarify was that the producers told him not to read the nominees. And I was like, bruh, that's not what people are clowning you for. They're clowning you because you were like, does my little eye spy Oppenheimer? Like, that's what people were like, what the fuck?
Where's the Oppenheimer?
I screamed. I could not even believe. Somebody made a point. They're like, if you want to make sure that your best picture reading is a disaster, award Emma Stone best actress. Because yeah. both times she's yeah. won best actress, the best Emma. Picture has been a debacle in the United
States. Poor Emma.
I know.
Man. I'm like, oh, girl. At first it was La La Land. Now it's Al Pacino coming up drunk and ready to go home. He literally was like, we got to wrap this shit up. I ain't got time for no kind of speech, no kind of niceties. Oppenheimer, come up and get this shit. And then it was like,
you know, I don't like secondhand embarrassment is like, that's like one of the worst feelings for me because I hate watching people like just fail. So when he says it and like nobody reacts, I said,
what happened?
and then the music starts playing and I'm scratching my back. This is so uncomfortable. And then like they all get up. I was like, that was terrible.
The Oppenheimer people looking around like, wait, shit. Let's go.
Al Pacino has kissed his chance of getting cast in a Christopher Nolan movie. Goodbye.
And like, it reminded me of that year. Remember the year when Chadwick passed away and they saved that for the last one?
Oh my God.
And then he didn't win. And then they rushed the fuck off air. They got out of there with the quickest. Anthony Hopkins wasn't even there. They said, we accept this award for Anthony Hopkins. Okay, good night, boys. Hey, I was like,
is that they like they set it up as well? We didn't know. We expected Chadwick to win. Who the fuck printed out the piece of paper and put it in the envelope? Yeah. You're telling me nobody knew? Somebody knew.
Yeah, I think they gotta stop reorganizing the award order based on like shock value, because that's what they did last night too.
Yeah.
Because every time they've done that, it's backfired in their face. Because last night they did it because actress was like the contender, you know, the one that was up, you know.
Oh, so they did it last,
so they put it right before best picture, but it deflated the entire mood, like you know. Yeah. And you hate to say that, like, again, congrats to Emma Stone, but you could just feel it, like it would have been
Stone felt it. I mean,
the poor girl didn't want to get up. She said, "Man, I'd rather
she got
redo."
Drunk. She got her fucking dress unzipped. She got up on that stage when they called her name. She was like, "What the fuck am I gonna?"
She was like, "Yo, I'd rather reenact my Gwen Stacy fall. I don't want to be up here. This is crazy."
So they did them. They shot themselves in the foot again. Like, they set themselves up for this moment, and then it deflated the entire mood of the night when Lily lost, and so now we have to go to best picture. And they did that with Chadwick too. They put him last, and then it just killed everything. Like, everyone was sad and disappointed, and like maybe Anthony Hopkins getting up there would have been nice, but obviously, well, that also showed their ass because they didn't even let him go to a center, even though he was a senior citizen in the middle of effing COVID, and they were like, no, you can't do your speech unless you're here. Like, what?
Yeah, it was a disaster.
It was wild. And also, Oscars, you raggedy bitches, listen.
What is happening?
I have to call this out before I forget. How they did the Godzilla Minus One team was dirty as hell.
Oh, I know.
And they were trying to speak. Oh, yeah.
They are making these people translate from their native language, trying to give a speech in English, and they're trying to honor their dead cast member, and you play them off? It was... I mean, I really was kind of appalled. Like,
it was sick.
It was really
gross. With all their little like Godzilla figures too.
Oh, they were so cute though.
So happy. It's like either you bring a translator up there or you translate some way.
Yeah,
or
Bong Joon-ho.
Joon-ho brought a translator. Severely, because obviously they looked at that category like it's a technical, so there's no need to like bring somebody up there and translate for them. But like with Bong Joon-ho, of course they had a translator because they were awarding him a best picture, best director, you know. So for them to just, and I know, I hate that it has become a thing recently where even us, we kind of throw the technicals to the side a little bit and we're like, oh, it's just the technicals. But it's just, when you see these people get awarded every year, it's such a good reminder of how big of a deal it is to them and just how much, like, these technical categories that we throw to the side, how important they are in making these movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's, so for that to happen this year, it really was, like, disgusting.
especially because they were honoring a dead, like, cast, like a part of their team that died, and they're getting hushed off the stage as they're trying to, like, translate in their head to a language. It was wild. I was like, oh, that's bad. That's horrible.
So let's go right into some of the other ones. Actress in a supporting role. Devine Joy Randolph, of course. Everyone expected that one. Oh, yeah. Animated feature film.
They got that one out the way. They're like, this is the biggest lock of the night. We're just going to put supporting actress.
Yeah, we're just going to go ahead and do this quick. I loved this speech. I loved the way that was all handled. I'm glad she won, too. Animated feature film. The Boy and the Heron got this. No Spider-Verse. And that was a big controversy. I don't know.
Shameik, you need to put Twitter down, first of all.
If we want to talk about a sore fucking loser.
That was wild.
Oh my God.
Sir, you wouldn't have even won the award.
And then he said, what did he say? I'm young. I said, brother, I don't know, man.
You're in your 20s?
I hate that the conversation around that word too has become like The Boy and the Heron is a terrible movie, and that Beyond lost to an awful movie. Like, this isn't a Wreck-It Ralph Brave situation, you know? The Boy and the Heron, I haven't seen it yet, but from what I understand, it's a great fucking movie. Mm-hmm. So I don't like that it's been... I hate that immediately when, like, the fan favorite isn't what ends up winning, we automatically result to the movie that did win is, like, awful, terrible, like, whatever. It's very annoying.
No, the way we talk about awards is wild. I mean, I was sad because I've seen them both, and I do think Spider-Verse is a better film, but how are you going to be mad at Miyazaki winning? Like, I mean... He's literally one of the game changers of the entire genre. Like, come on.
They probably was like,
Spider-Verse wouldn't exist without Miyazaki movies. I mean, like, we're being real.
And even the filmmakers were like, if you're going to lose, we're going to lose to Miyazaki, not Shameik Moore running on it. He didn't even spell robbed right. He said robed and had to do a follow-up tweet with robbed. I was like, give it up. Like, this is crazy.
I was like, I don't think a Spider-Man movie is gonna do it twice. So I honestly was not expecting it to win. Just for that.
I also think they're saving it for Beyond. I hope. I hope that's the case. Is there like we got one more?
I just called it Beyond across. Sorry.
Not this, Hannah.
Dude, they need to do something to make those titles a little bit different.
No, I mean I agree. I know
into
Spider-Verse,
across, and Beyond. It's just so many adjectives.
Shut up.
Cinematography. Oppenheimer. We had
that surprised me, by the way. I thought Killers was like a lock.
You thought it was a lock?
Yeah, because I figured that they were gonna award Killers for something because Lily was gonna win actress. So I was like, Killers is gonna take cinematography because they gotta give it something other
Martin
than actress.
When are we? All of these 10 nominations are great and all, but when is the Scorsese movie gonna win?
So, listen, they have to get over whatever beef they have with that little old man, and I'm getting mad because you guys are actively bullying like an 80-year-old man, and it's pissing me off actually because he shows up to your award show every fucking year.
Ooh,
and you guys play in his face every goddamn time.
And he was getting his life to I'm Just Ken.
He was oh my God, he's so cute. I love him so bad. That's people.
Directing, we have Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan. Congrats. That's his first time, right?
That is insane, by the way.
That's nuts.
First ever win.
Oh my
finally.
God.
Talk about overdue shit.
Yeah,
we got
Denis in 10 years.
For real, though. Shit.
We got music. Listen, I love Ludwig Göransson. It's the fact that, because I don't want to get any blowback or anything, but it's like, when I think of like Michael Giacchino and when I think of like Hans Zimmer, I feel like I know what I'm going to get. And it's not a bad thing because they're great at what they do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely phenomenal. But Ludwig, if you go to his track record, it's like you go from African hip hop.
Started on New Girl, by the way.
yeah, but it's like, you if you can go from African beats centric hip hop to like Oppenheimer to like what else he like he does all this shit, and I'm like I just, it's baffling that that's one person, you know. His style is just so varied. It's not just like one, it's not just action movies. Tenet, it's too. Like, yeah, it's just so.
Tenet is varied.
Oh, and then like Wakanda Forever score. Like, he's just so good at what he does. And he's a two-time nominee. Two-time winner. And I think it's absolutely deserved because that score for Oppenheimer. Oh man!
Oh, he's so beautiful.
Everybody's seeing him and is like, "Wait a minute! You see why the tweet with somebody in front of the camera?"
Yeah, somebody was like, "How come he's not like a pop star or something like
that?" No, one of my Twitter mutuals, he tweeted. He goes, "I love his music and everything. Why is he not on screen? Why is he not?"
But I love Lord Ludwig. I really, really do. He's like, oh man, he's just such a great talent, and he's so young. There's
Christopher
so
Nolan
more.
Snatched his ass from
and I can't wait to see what he does next. Oh man, I love him. That Tenet score, I was watching Tenet the other day, and I'm just like,
that Tenet might be my favorite work of his. It's what he didn't even get nominated for Tenet, but
I think it's Black.
It's so good.
Well, no, we were all shook when Tenet didn't get a best score. Like, we were like, if it's gonna get one thing, it didn't get shit, right? It didn't get nominated for anything, even visuals, nothing. But yeah, no. I'm like, okay.
If they ever do a Miles Morales movie, I pray that he does it. I really pray that he does it, because in the video game they do a great job of doing the orchestra kind of Spider-Man beat on top of hip hop, and I know he would kill that too. I hope he does it.
Side note, Daniel Pemberton, we haven't forgotten, you were robbed hella bad. Should have been on the nomination list. Wild.
Yep. Yeah, you know who was also like kind of a snub for me this year? The Mutant Mayhem score, Trent Reznor. Did a fantastic job.
Well, they were just kind of snub. I mean,
yeah.
Elemental, the whole movie. You took. Yeah. Everybody was pointing at Robot Dreams, but Elemental, you really took TMNT spot. I'm going to just say it like it is.
You did. Very much so. Because that Mutant Mayhem score goes crazy.
Wait, Dwayne? So what you're saying, though, Dwayne, is you don't want to see that Dune Part 2 score nominated next year.
No, what you mean? Of course I do.
You said fuck Hans Zimmer. We don't need to see him in
Ludwig, I don't think he's doing. I don't think he has anything in his cards this year.
So. Dwayne said Ludwig ain't here, so Hans, you can come back.
I mean, that's my goat.
Think that the Dune Part 2 score is far better than the Dune Part 1 score.
Oh, I absolutely agree. That opening and the
yeah.
When Hans he's riding the sandworm.
Oh, no, that Chani and like Paul theme too is so good.
Yeah. Hans Zimmer, no shade, you definitely phoned it in for part one.
Oh, now hold on, not a phone in. Hans Zimmer, listen, no, Hans Zimmer phones it in. I sometimes forget some of these movies he be doing. Like, he does some random shit still to this
what
day.
What did he do? I think, wasn't
well,
it
he
like
does the Kung
Dark
Fu Panda
Phoenix?
Movies, but let me just tell you, Kung Fu Panda 3's original score slaps. That's like one of Hans Zimmer's most underrated scores to me.
Didn't he do like something, a terrible comic book movie? I'm forgetting what
it
was.
Did. He did.
I know he
Dark
did
Phoenix.
BBS. He did Dark Phoenix. I was baffled. Okay. I was like, why? Why did you do that?
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, Hans Zimmer, you stole the Batman's spot for Dune Part
Hannah
1. Chill. So.
Hannah, chill.
Yes, the Batman was robbed, but I'm not going to go as far to say his Dune stole it.
And then, of course, Best Picture, The Ops. I mean, come on now.
Wait, we ain't going to talk about Lil Billy?
What's
the for one? Music? Becoming, setting the record for the youngest two-time winner in any category in history, Billie Eilish?
I think she's overrated. I don't know, dude.
She deserved for that song, though.
Phineas, too. He's the second youngest to win twice.
I think they're both
if anything, No Time to Die is the one of the song that shouldn't have won. But What Was I Made For? Deserved. Was 100% deserved it. She was whispering, though, and then people did not turn up her mic. I was like, y'all, did you not know who she was? Because this microphone, she's getting drowned out by that piano. It was wild, but
Well,
I'm just Ken, though. Stole the night. Ryan Gosling,
Everyone was like dreading that performance because we're like, we're over it. We are so over it at this point. And then for him to show up the way he did, I was like, literally, it took like 10 seconds for me to be like, hold on, wait.
Look, y'all gonna have to step it up because that was a performance, baby. I was like, I need that pink suit. Dwayne, if I show up in a pink suit like what Ryan Gosling wore to your wedding, look the other way.
No, do what you gotta do.
Hold on, I mean, because that suit was so good.
Oppenheimer, best picture. Were y'all really surprised? Anybody?
No, I don't know. No one was surprised. Yeah, literally. I mean, who didn't have that as their
low key? I mean, I would have liked the past lives just because I don't know the vibes. But hey, I loved Oppenheimer, so I'm not upset. Yo, chill.
She is like, fuck the ops. That's what's... No, the ones I was most disappointed, obviously, actress was the one I was most disappointed with. I was personally a little bit disappointed about animation, but, you know, you can't go wrong with Miyazaki, so I'm still whatever on that one. The other one was, I predicted it. I knew it was going to win. I was really hoping Barbie would take production design away from Poor Things. But I really wanted them to just split. I wanted Poor Things to win costumes and Barbie to win production because they both were so good in both categories. I just felt like, I don't know, I wanted to split because that's just how I am.
Yeah, Poor Things production, though, over Barbie. I mean, I know they built the Barbie stuff, but Poor Things was, like, gorgeous. Like, some of these. Good,
but I don't know. And that's how I felt about the costumes. Is I was like, the costumes were original. They were amazing in Poor Things. That's why I was like, give Poor Things. It won, which was a shock. I don't think. I think we knew it had a chance, but I think we all kind of defaulted that Maestro was probably going to win because of the prosthetic work. Mm-hmm. So when they were like, nah, bitch, Willem Dafoe trumps.
That's what I'm saying. Prosthetic.
I was doing backflips when they was sweeping the technicals because I thought that was going to be I didn't even think they were going to win any technicals. So when they were, I was like, wow, this is the one thing we got tonight.
The technical side, I can't disagree. I mean, I'm not a fan of the movie, but if you're talking about production, makeup, and hairstyling, what else was it that you said that costumes. They won? Costumes. I mean, I would go with that probably. I mean,
it's deserving.
They're righting their wrongs for
it's
the
like
favorite.
The top two, but... I don't know. I just wanted Barbie to sneak either production or costumes, and I would have preferred production. But the other one I knew it was going to win. I predicted this too. I just really would have loved a Past Lives win for original screenplay. Anatomy of a Fall, which is great. Heart just wanted Past Lives to, you know, win it. But I knew it had no chance. I just wanted it.
It's that scene. I think it's mostly for the performance, but that scene of like her tearing down the dude, it's so good. Like I've read that scene a bunch of times. It's really good.
Hannah, you finally watched Past Lives.
I did.
About a bawling mess at the end, huh?
Yeah, I was pretty wrecked last night. I had to watch like 2 hours of Avatar afterwards. I was like, I can't end my night on this note. I still need to get to a few other ones, but I need to watch American Fiction. I think that'll probably be the next one I watch. I'm dreading watching Anatomy of a Fall because I know that the dog scene is like pretty graphic, and I know it's fake, and I know Messi's okay, but I'm just like, I'm very sensitive to animal violence in movies, and I know it's like, usually I can skip past it and it's fine because
he doesn't
like,
get like abused or anything, but it's like
I know what
overdose.
It is.
It's like
it's wild. You're like, what the fuck is wrong with this child?
I know what it is. So that's why, and usually I can like skip past the violence in movies because it's not like a plot point in there or anything, but it's a plot point in Anatomy of a Fall. So I'm like,
we gotta celebrate though. We got our boy. We made a big enough noise online. Messi got to go to the Oscars.
Not the clap though.
I was so happy when I saw his little ass at the Oscars. I said, you stuffy old jealous bitches who were trying to block him from coming to the Oscars because he stole your thunder. Like, get out of it. That is so stupid. I'm so
glad. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
I thought they were just mad because, like,
showing up.
Who gives a shit?
Because he was like, everybody was talking about Messi at that last award show where Ryan Gosling was working with, you know, all that. And of course, they were like, oh, it's swaying the voters, having the dog there. And so they didn't want him at the Oscars. It was so dumb. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, so I'm glad he was there and stole the thunder again because everybody was talking about him. Well, also, Cord Jefferson's speech, another highlight for me. I agree.
Oh my God, Cord Jefferson speech.
He's sexy too. Oh, yeah.
I love that speech though. I absolutely love his speech. And he's right. He's right. I love the speech. Real quick, because I gotta go. Let's speed through some of these news real quick.
Hold on, wait. I gotta read you guys a tweet. Geez. I gotta read you guys a tweet about Messi at the Oscars. Somebody, Keon on Twitter, he quote tweeted the picture of Messi at the Oscars. He said the blacklisting didn't work. Now the Oscar nominees are embarrassed.
Right. I know our DJ was feeling some type of way because everyone was looking at Messi like, that's the real best supporting actor. I don't know.
By the way, I didn't get those tweets. I thought that they meant that like RDJ was the one who said something about a dog being at the Oscars. Right. And I was like, oh, but that it made sense that never he didn't.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, it's a mess. Listen, anyway. I'm not saying. Wait, please. Okay. big news today: the Batman Part 2 delayed to October 2nd, 2026. This is egregious. I don't know. This is just egregious. I'm gonna say what I gotta say. I don't think this has anything to do with scripts or anything like that. I don't think they want this thing. I think they want DC 2025 to be Superman and Superman only. I had a feeling this was going to happen when it came to the Batman. The Batman was critically acclaimed. It, you know, box office was really strong. I presume that they just don't want to compete with themselves. And they were just like, all right, we're just going to move it.
Yeah, it's either that or I also was, I thought maybe Rob is becoming a parent this year. So could have to do with that too.
So who's that anti-Edward over there that's like pushing all of Rob's movies back?
No, literally.
Yeah.
They really pushed his Bong Joon-ho movie on out of the year. They pushed Batman back a whole year. And like, what is going on?
This is so anti-rejected, Hannah, because they don't want me to see Rob on the big screen. So
and bad. I feel like if they, I'm going to put my tinfoil cap on. Ooh. I feel like if they would have made a decision, hey, we're redoing the DCEU. We're going to, you know, all DC stuff is just going to get scrapped. I think if they would have like, was going to be like, okay, you know, the Batman, they had the, you know, it's, we're not going to make any more. We're going to focus on this universe. They would have gotten the blowback of a lifetime. So I think to make everyone happy, Matt Reeves, everybody, Robert, everybody, we're just going to delay it, you know, to 2026. I don't know, because Larry and I were talking about this. It does not do well when movies get delayed almost. And like, you know, the second one comes out like 4 or 5 years after the first one, box office wise.
The only person that's ever worked out for is James Cameron.
Yeah. And it's like, I people love the Batman, but I feel like by 2026, October, people are going to be like, the Batman 2?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, and I don't think that's good. So I don't like this move at all. This has nothing to, for me, in my opinion, this has nothing to do with like, oh, the script's not done. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I mean, what are we doing? I don't know. There was a trailer for the first one after like 25% shooting or whatever. I know that script is already done. And I know it is. Matt Reeves, you think it takes him 5 years to do a script? That thing's done. It's done. And I can't believe, I don't know. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right.
Rob is only getting older, too.
Like, yeah, man. I don't know. Everything about
Rob
it.
Is old or anything, but I mean, for his Bruce, at least, they were definitely painting him as like a younger Batman.
Yeah, and now he's like, I don't know. It's just a bad feeling I'm getting. The last big news.
If anything, worse comes to worse, we have a great fucking Batman movie that we that is exactly. out. We have it forever. There's nothing they can do about that.
Exactly. That's true. I I honestly ended up, I honestly feel like this thing's not gonna, I don't want to go there.
I think it's gonna happen. I think it's gonna happen.
I don't know, man. 2026, if they said, like, we're going to 2020, late 2025 or something, 2026 is so far away. Yeah, I don't think it's happening. And then when are you gonna do your fucking, what's this fucking shit called? Brave, what is it? Brave and the Bold, whatever. That. When are you doing that one?
Yeah.
I don't know. That thing's not happening, bro. So thank you, Matt Reeves, for that one that I got.
Yeah,
thank you. Right. Thank you for the Penguin show when that comes out, because that's all we're gonna get. Unfortunately, I feel like. Last bit of news, listen, Neve Campbell returning to Scream 7. I am not happy about this. I would have liked for everyone to support Melissa Barrera and that horrible-ass firing. I do not like this at all. I don't care about Scream 7.
Especially disgusting because everyone in that cast rallied behind Neve when she was unfairly paid. So for her to stab everybody in the back doing this, it's disgusting.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed. I was really, because the only way you can like force Spyglass to get rid of it is if you all are like, nah, we're not going to be a part of this. Like they can try to get a new cast, but they are, you know, that would bomb so hard. And like the one thing pretty much that they could, like, that we didn't need to happen was Neve coming back. And here she is. So, it's very, very disappointing move from her.
And I did a tweet today regarding how disappointed I was about it. And I muted it immediately because I knew I was going to get, like, geeks. And, like, ow, everybody gets fired from their jobs. And, like, people are making it seem like she got laid off or something. Or, like, we kind of want to move in a different direction. That's not the issue. The issue is why they fired her. I don't want to get into the politics of it all, yada, yada, yada. But it's ridiculous and it's egregious why she got removed from the project to begin with. So for you to be upset at me that I'm angry that it happened and Neve is coming back, you know, it's just all feels wrong to me. So I will say going forward, this is the only Scream coverage you're going to get for the movie. If news comes out that Jenna Ortega's back, or if news come out that the other cast is back and Hayden Panettiere, you're not going to hear it from me because I'm all set on this film. People are like, oh, you're still going to go see it. I mean, brother, please. I love this franchise. I love the last two. I love all these movies equally. But at the end of the day, an actress was mishandled. An actress was wronged regarding, you know, what she... And it's not like she came out like on some Gina Carano shit. You know what I mean? It's nothing like that.
No.
Well, but this is the thing too, is that like we've seen a lot of actors and actresses now come out like calling for a ceasefire, supporting Palestinians, and they're like working under people who have been vocal about Israel. I mean, the industry as a whole is very pro-Israel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's been no firing. There hasn't been like removal of them from the project or anything like that, and I'm not saying that to like praise the people who are like pro-Israel. It's not at all what I'm saying. They're all wrong and disgusting, but this is the only case of this that we've seen right now, at least.
Yeah.
So for Spyglass to make the move and fire her over feeling differently is disgusting in itself, but then to not only double down and have the cast support Melissa, try and go back and get Melissa again, and then her decline it, rightfully so, and then reach back out to Neve Campbell after they wronged her, and no doubt offering her the money that she deserved in the first place, and for Neem to accept it.
That's
especially because the only reason they have that money is because Melissa and Jenna.
Melissa's not there. Yeah,
they're using the money they would have given to Melissa and Jenna to up what they'll offer her. And Courtney's not coming back either. Too, it's already confirmed, right? Courtney.
I think Courtney's in the books. I think she is.
Oh, I thought she was out.
I think Jenna's the one who's out officially.
Yeah.
Obviously, Courtney's not confirmed, but yeah.
It just makes like, I know you need a bag, but it's like, you're like the lame duck. And it's like, they're going back to you because, hey, we need a lifeline. We can't just return with a whole new cast and a reboot. Like, we need a lifeline. Come back. And, oh my God, the whole thing is just really, really frustrating. And as a Scream fan a year ago, like, I'm on cloud nine. I saw Scream 6 like 5 or 6 times. And to have it just go down this complete rabbit hole after all of this, it's a disaster. Kevin Williams is directing it. Good for Kevin Williams. I want no parts of this bad boy.
Everything that went down with Landon. I mean, it just all was such a disaster.
Oh yeah, he walked away. He was a huge Scream fan. They wanted to rush. They wanted to rush Radio Silence. The directors of the last two.
Even then, Landon did say some like weird stuff regarding Melissa before he actually doubled down.
He didn't know what to do. He was like doing all this, and then he got bullied, and then he was like, "All right, I gotta go." Sometimes you gotta bully, and that's the thing that's so frustrating. Because even she was at a Comic Con actually just recently, and Melissa said, "You know, Sam's story's not done. I would love, you know, the fans are amazing for Scream, and the fans deserve better. And if Spyglass gives up the rights, I'm back immediately. Like, of course, I'll be back for Scream 7 right then, or Scream 8 or whatever immediately. And the only way you're gonna get a company like Spyglass that ain't got shit." Other than Scream, to give up that property is if everybody comes together, nobody's coming back, the fans say F this and don't go watch it. That's like the only way that it even would have a shot. So, and that got killed, you know, like once the legacy character, the actress, comes back, that's killed, because that also, as Dwayne saw, you know, we obviously we see a lot of Scream on our timelines because we're, you know, mutuals or whatever with a lot of these folks, and all they care about is getting Sydney back. So now that Sydney's back, they're gonna come back. So like a big portion of the fandom is also gonna come back and watch that movie. It's not gonna do as big as the last one, I'll guarantee you, but
yeah, I don't think so either.
Do something like, and so I don't know that it's going to take the hit it needs to take to get the message across. So it's all just today's announcement was a big, big bummer, particularly because Melissa, some people were like, well, she still went and did Scream 6, so how much did she really support her? And it's like, no, one, it was a completely different thing. Like, I don't know, it was a completely different, like, the situation on why Nev didn't come back for 6 versus Melissa Barrera getting unjustly fired for 7 is completely different, first of all. And second of all, she was very supportive of her on the trail. All of us fans were also very supportive of Nev. So, I don't know. It was a big letdown today.
Yeah, and it's like, regarding how it's going to do, what I'll say is that Nev Campbell was plastered on that first movie's marketing, the fifth one, when they returned and everything. And then it was like a baton. She passed the baton off to Melissa and Jenna. She didn't return for the Scream 6. That movie did the biggest Scream opening without Nev Campbell. Was it ever, Larry? I believe it did the biggest Scream opening.
Yeah, without adjusting for inflation,
It did bigger than Scream 4, which was led by Nev Campbell. When that was returning, it did bigger than Scream 5, which was the return of Nev Campbell and company. They had a new generation of Scream fans that was coming to the theater regarding, you know, these new actresses, Melissa, Jenna, the core four, whatever, you know. I don't know. Because what are they going to do? They're going to Scream 7. Nev's back. Ghostface is in California. And fuck, I don't know. So, Yeah. So that's it. That's the news from today regarding Neve Campbell returning for Scream 7. I just, this timeline, I've been off Twitter for like 4 hours. This timeline is just abysmal. Just everyone is like, there's people who, yeah. And I get so frustrated because like the actor strike, I put this on my tweet too. The actor strike is like everybody, people that are, you know, celebrating the Neve return and saying Scream is so back, yada, yada, yada. All of you guys on record right there, it's on Twitter, it's you know, it's there forever, are saying like support the actors, support the performers, support this, but oh no, but not when my favorite movie's coming back, my favorite character's coming back though, not when that's happening. And that's not okay to me, because you both know how much of a Scream fan I am. So you would expect me to be like, yeah, we're back. I know, this is really stupid. I don't like the decision. I'm not with it. So yeah, we'll end it right there. But all right, everyone, that is it for this episode of The World Show. Thank you guys all for listening. Hannah, Larry, let everyone know where they can follow you. I'll start with you, Hannah.
You can follow me at Richard Hannah on Twitter.
All right, and Larry.
Yep, you can find me over on YouTube and on Instagram at Chili Boy Productions and on Twitter at Chili Boy YT.
All right, everyone, you can follow me on Twitter at CinemaniaC94. You can follow the podcast, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cinemania World. Thank you guys for joining us. My name is Dwayne. That was Larry. That was Hannah. We'll talk to you guys soon.